This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning. Because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI.
Woo!
Welcome into episode 435 of the Skate Podcast. I am Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. Today we have some mailbag questions for you. They are spillover since the Boston Bruins management and ownership press conference that happened last week. Speaking of which, I'm going to throw it to Scott now for the opening shifts because there's something else we wanted to get to that has been going on in Bruins Nation.
Yeah, my opening shift's about kind of a different type of spillover related to maybe some of our mailbag questions, but just the lingering anger that I sense since Wednesday from the fan base directed towards ownership and management, towards Charlie Jacobs, Cam Neely, and Don Sweeney. And I'm sure you guys sense it as well, whether it's on social media or even just hearing from friends or relatives. Like, you know, I was with people over the weekend and it's like, first thing they say is like, how does Don Sweeney still have a job? And, you know, if you're the Bruins, it's like, obviously you can't base your decision-making and your approach to this on just on fan reaction. But I keep thinking back to Charlie Jacobs' comments to the Globe where he said he doesn't understand why there are fans calling for Cam Neely and or Don Sweeney's jobs. And I just feel like there's a disconnect there between, I think everyone knows there's disappointment. You know, they acknowledged disappointment on Wednesday from fans. They said they're disappointed as well. But I feel like there's a disconnect in terms of the anger and just how mad that this fan base is towards them right now. And to push it forward, I wonder how this plays out. Like, what does this look like? What form does this anger take as we move towards next season? And what, if anything, can this ownership and management group do to win fans back? Like, do they just have to win? Is that the only thing? Or is there, you know, are there other steps that can be taken that can start to appease some fans? And, you know, to be clear, like, I think it's a lot of fans who are angry. I know it's not all of them. I know there are also fans who maybe are able to take a more pragmatic approach. And I've even heard from fans who think that this management group does deserve the shot at operating this retool. So I know there's, you never want to blanket statement it, but I do think it's safe to say there's a lot of anger among the fan base. And I just wonder what that looks like moving forward and what, if anything, they can do to kind of win people back and, you know, diffuse some of that anger.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of lingering anger about Charlie Jacobs' comments about the increase in ticket prices. And Like comments just kept rolling in on the tweet that I put up of the clip of him talking about how, oh, the price of everything's going up, your electric bill is going up, and fans just not wanting to pay more money to go see a product that they don't think is going to be up to what they've been expecting from the Bruins. And so if they're not really convinced that next season is going to be much better, they don't feel like paying for tickets. And we'll see. A lot of comments about, oh, I'm just going to watch at home at the bar, whatever. I'm not going to buy tickets. We'll see if it actually impacts, you know, the number of people that come, the amount that they make off tickets. It could all just be anger and, you know, people still end up going because they want to watch hockey. So we'll probably start to see what the impact of what Scott's talking about is next season, maybe early next season. My opening shift has to do with the Providence Bruins, who are still in the AHL playoffs. They won their first round series 2-1, and kind of, you know, shorter series in the first round, 3-game series. They'll move on to play the Charlotte Checkers, 5-game series for that one. So if you're still looking to go watch somebody like Matt Patra, Fabian Lysell, Fraser Mitton, Georgie Merkulov, there's a guy down there that you want to go see. There's still time to get tickets and go to Providence and watch.
Maybe not Merkulov. Merkulov's currently injured. I don't know when he's expected back, but
and
he did miss the first round series.
Good point, Scott. And anyway, still some guys to go down there and watch. I know we normally get a lot of mailbag questions about Matt Patra. He's somebody that people want to see. He scored 2 goals in the final game of that series. They end up winning 5-1. So when you look at some of the stats from the series, he's got 2 goals. Riley Tufte also had 2 goals in that game. Lysell doesn't have a goal yet. But yeah, it could be fun to go down and watch how those guys do. And we talked about how important it is for some guys like that to get playoff experience, even though they're not getting it in the NHL, because Matt Patra still before this didn't have any pro experience in the playoffs. So, you know, and Lysell had been injured during previous playoff runs as well. So yeah, that's still going on. Follow along. If you're looking to follow someone on Twitter for that, Mark Diver is a great follow. He'll normally post some quotes after the game. Bruins Network, who's what's run by my friend Anthony, posts some clips of, you know, key moments of different prospects that people are interested in as well. So follow along. That's the only playoffs we still have going on around here hockey wise. But Celtics too. So I've been enjoying that as well.
So we know that the offseason is going to be bold for the Bruins. They're going to try to get aggressive probably in free agency. We know that they have a high draft pick coming up. Not that that will necessarily impact them next season. We know that they have some younger players that they're hoping can step up. They have some returning players they hope can have bounce back seasons. But one of the areas where they may get bold and it's just tough for us to predict is the trade market potentially. And I feel like a lot of times teams that are in the playoffs in a given season learn something about their clubs. We need to get better here. This guy underperformed here. Maybe he's expendable in a trade if his contract allows it. And so one team in the NHL playoffs right now that is struggling in a certain area is the Edmonton Oilers when it comes to goaltending. Now, last night, thanks to some third period heroics from Evan Bouchard and an overtime winner from Leon Draisaitl, the Oilers actually have tied their series with the Kings 2-2. Byfield had the puck, had a chance to clear it out and give LA a 3-1 series lead, but things happen and it's 2-2. So if the Edmonton Oilers turn around and end up winning a Stanley Cup, then what I'm about to say is probably moot. But if they lose in this first round and they think goaltending is a big reason why, well, there's a goaltender in Boston right now who's pretty polarizing that has all the potential in the world, but based off of last year, didn't play very well, and that's Jeremy Swayman. And I've seen people online linking, you know, not based on any facts, just curious, like, I wonder if Swayman would be a good fit in the Oilers system if he is the missing piece to them, if he plays to his level and Edmonton fall short this year and they try to make a big change. And obviously, Jeremy Swayman has an 8-year contract with the Bruins, 7 remaining. He has no trade clause through next season. So if the Bruins want to trade him, if they find a trading partner, Jeremy doesn't really have much of a say. But it is the contract. It's the term and the value that is problematic when we're trying to move Swayman if they wanted to. So I guess I'm just throwing it out to you guys. I'm not saying the Bruins should or would trade Swayman. But if there's a team out there that feels like goaltending is their Achilles heel and that Jeremy Swayman could be the missing piece, could this be an area of boldness that the Bruins could take, which is moving Swayman for the right deal? Obviously, that gives you a bit of a hole yourself in goal. So there's pros and cons to everything, even if it is the right deal. But people are talking about it online, and the playoffs tend to bring out teams' flaws, and people talk about it and say, well, that could be addressed by this team that's outside the playoffs right now.
Yeah, and so just to clarify, Swayman currently does not have any trade protection. Bruins can trade him anywhere. I know sometimes it can be confusing when you say, like, he has no trade protection. And it's like, wait, does that mean he has no space trade protection? Or, you know, he currently has, like, he can block a trade. So, yeah, that his no trade clause does not kick in until next summer. So that's why, obviously, coming off a disappointing season, you do see people bringing up the possibility of trading him now. But as Brian alluded to, like, I don't know. I have a hard time imagining a team taking on the full contract for the next 7 years. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, a team like Edmonton, you're right. If they get knocked out in the first round and it's because Stuart Skinner and Calvin Picard stink, are they desperate enough to say, you know what? We saw what Swayman did in the playoffs last year. We believe in the talent and we'll take that chance. Possible, just seems unlikely to me. And so then you get into, like, would the Bruins retain any salary? And that's just tough to do when it's 7 years. Like, what, you're going to pay $1 million a year for the next 7 years for Jeremy Swayman to go play for someone else? I just have a hard time seeing it. So, you know, as I sit here now, I guess until or unless we hear, like, real reporting that this is a possibility, whether it's the Oilers or someone else, I have a hard time seeing it, but I don't think it's insane to bring up because, like we said, like, there's, how can the Bruins not be disappointed in what they got from Jeremy Swayman this year? And I think we heard some of that from Don Sweeney on Wednesday, where, you know, he's asked about Swayman and he could have easily said, yeah, we're confident Jeremy's going to bounce back. He's a hardworking kid. We believe in him, and we're not too worried about it moving forward. He could have said that. Even if it's not the truth, you can say that. Instead, what you got was, yeah, you know, there are times this year where maybe he shouldn't have played so much, and Jonas Korpisalo should have played more, and next year we're going to have more of a true goalie competition again. Like, that's not exactly a huge vote of confidence in Jeremy Swayman. That's saying, like, hey, kid, you're not just going to be handed 58 starts next year. You're going to have to earn it. So, you know, I think that's about as much frustration as you get from Don Sweeney, who usually is the more tempered one between him and Cam Neely. So, but I did think that was telling that it wasn't just, like, full-throated support and confidence being expressed in him.
Yeah, Brian, can you do your Don Sweeney impersonation?
Yeah, well, you know, Jeremy, you got to earn it, and that's not going to be given to you, and Corpy's doing a good job there, so... Yeah, something like that. I haven't done that in a while.
yeah. And the trouble lies in not only, you know, would you have to retain, but, like, would you be getting back what you wanted in return as well? Like, what are they sending your way? But hypotheticals we don't have to get into because we actually have a few mailbag questions that we wanted to get into that were from the Wednesday topics of conversation about the, you know, just comments from management and ownership.
Yeah. Do we want to go right into that? Or did you guys have any other opening shift Thoughts?
I have one. I mean, I could get to it as we get into these questions, but I could just say it now. I mean, Scott, regarding yours, I mean, I think that what can management and ownership do to win back fans is the question, right? And I think that the answer depends on which fans you're asking, because some fans might say the Jacobs can win me back by selling the team, or they can win me back by firing Cam Neely and Don Sweeney, or something like that. And that's just a response where if that's how you feel, then that's how you feel. Other people might say they can win me back by hitting on this draft pick coming up, hitting in free agency and getting back to being a Stanley Cup champion in short order, which, cause you said earlier, like winning obviously can solve people's feelings. I think like I kind of alluded to last week, there is a relationship issue right now between the Bruins ownership, management, fans, and then media who speak on behalf of the fans. And I know there are some fans out there who are saying, well, they were just answering the questions media was asking. And look, that's fair. I just think that it's kind of how they answered. And one answer they gave where I wish that, and it's hindsight's 2020 and it's tough in the moment, but my dad actually brought this up to me because we were talking about it. And he said, you know, the one comment that I didn't like that Sweeney said was that head coaches just lose the Romaneva shelf life. And Charlie Jacobs kind of echoed that too. They said it's like the nature of the beast and that, you know, coaches lose rooms and it just happens in the sport. And I do wonder if somebody could have said, well, Don, why is it that your players are losing, that coaches are losing the room? Your players are allowing that to happen, you know, a couple of times in a couple of years. Is there any self-reflection in the room that you think you should be looking at as manager? Like why is that happening so frequently? Why do they tune out Bruce Cassidy? Why do they tune out Montgomery? And I personally don't think that Monty was, I don't even know if it was so much that Monty lost the room or if it was just a perfect storm and Monty was having contract extension issues and he kind of started to have a foot out the door. I don't really know, but I just didn't like the answer of, you know, coaches can lose the room without really explaining, okay, well, why is that then? Because that's not just on the coaches.
Well, I mean, he did turn over the room too. Like maybe that should have happened sooner, but I mean, Marchand, Carlo, Coyle, Frederick, they're all gone. Like they moved on from DeBrusk last year. So I would say the majority of the core of the team over the last 5-6 years is gone now. So the room has been turned over, and whether that's because there was an issue or because that's just what was necessitated by the on-ice product and it was time to sell and blow it up. Regardless, the end result is that you now have a completely different room. So whatever issues may have been in that room, if you think there were leading up to the Cassidy firing and or the Montgomery firing, like it's largely gone. I mean, unless you think like just Pastrnak and McAvoy and Swayman were the issues, like that's basically all that's left. You know, Hampus Lindholm, like, otherwise, it's a totally new room. So that has been shaken up big time.
And that was actually my takeaway. I even tweeted this out after the press conference, maybe the next day. Through all the drama and through all the snippy answers and bold, possibly offensive media questions, whatever. I mean, I don't know. But at the end of the day, the Bruins management and ownership, they didn't really do themselves many favors in that press conference, but ultimately they did do the right thing at last year's deadline. And they know they have work to do this summer. So through all of the, you know, tension and emotions of the press conference, like X's and O's, like they their actions are telling you that they're recognizing their mistakes and that's why they did what they did at the deadline. And so I guess it's why this offseason is going to be so interesting for sure. Bridget, did you have any follow-ups and then we can get to the mailbag?
No, I'm good to get to the mailbag.
Just one quick one on Providence. They all, because the first round is only best of three, like they almost got goalied out of the playoffs. I mean, they were clearly the better team in that series, but game one, they outshoot Springfield 40-15 and lose 2-0 with an empty netter. In game two is 0-0 going to overtime. Yeah. When Vinny Lattery scores the winner to keep them alive. And then Sunday in game three, they finally break through and score five. But yeah, that would have been so, because I know like that team and the organization, they're anticipating a relatively deep run. Like they think this is going to be real valuable experience for some of those younger players that Bridget mentioned. And they almost got knocked out in two games because they just ran into a hot goalie, which is like, would have been so frustrating. And it's because it's like, what can you even do about that? You know, I saw people like sarcastic online, like, oh, they're just like the big club. They can't score. And I'm like, they scored the fifth most goals in the AHL this season. There's 32 teams in the AHL. They were fifth in offense. Like it hasn't been an issue, but it was the first two games before they finally broke through.
Also, really tough to have a three-game series determine, you know, moving on. And like, that's not a lot of playoff experience at all. If they had lost in two games, like that wouldn't have really helped much at all.
You would have learned like almost nothing about these kids. So yeah, so very good for them that they are moving on.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our first question today, which is an email from Brooke, and she asks, why does it seem like you guys are okay with a lame duck GM, but a lame duck coach is recipe for disaster? I see no difference. I don't see how a lack of extension should impact either's performance. Personally, I feel like it should be motivation for both to do the best job possible if their jobs are on the line. If you're confident in your abilities, then you should be happy to do everything you can to prove yourself. Bridget, Scott, do one of you want to take this?
Sure, I can start. So I guess my first point would be, I'm not necessarily okay with having a lame duck GM either, but I do think it's less of an issue because a lame duck coach is directly responsible for the day-to-day. He's interacting with players every day. He's coming up with game plans. He's running training camp, which we saw was an issue last year. And if he's not fully invested, or he thinks he doesn't have a future here, or maybe even has a foot out the door and knows there's another opportunity, then you're not getting the best. And that more directly affects the team on a day-to-day basis. Or, you know, if players start thinking like, hey, coach so-and-so doesn't really seem to be fully invested, we all know he's on the last year of his contract. Like, what's going on there? Like, that's also not good. Whereas with a GM, yes, he talks to players pretty consistently throughout the season. Yes, he has some say in game planning, but it's not as much on a day-to-day basis. Like with a GM, where you're thinking of it affecting the team is more big picture, where it's like, okay, does he approach free agency differently if he thinks he's GMing for his job? Does he approach the trade deadline differently? So you'll have moments where those questions seep in, but it's these like big events on the calendar, these big like team building spots on the calendar. It's not every single day where it can start to pile up with like one bad day after another. So I guess that to me is why there's a difference, because there's fewer opportunities for any doubts or questions there to seep into the team's play on the ice.
And I also think that, first of all, if he is at the point where he's at the trade deadline and he still doesn't have a contract, that might actually be beneficial for what Bruins fans want, because maybe he does just go a little bit harder in on trying to make the playoffs or trying to make a run. Maybe he makes the team more entertaining rather than what he did this year. If he's in a position that it's, you know, it could go either way, maybe he makes the choice to not do that. I also think one of the reasons why
that could also be a problem for different reasons, though.
Yes, like, it could be a problem which is what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
if you are GMing for your job, you make different decisions more than likely. However, I do think he understands that he will have a life as a GM somewhere else after the Bruins. And this would be part of his track record, whatever he does in this final year. And you don't want to make a blemish on your track record just because, you know, you're in desperation mode. And I think he's smart enough to have that long-sighted future plan for himself to not do that. I think what people are afraid of is that it comes down to like hurt feelings, and maybe he knows he's not coming back. Like, and at the deadline, he decides to just like blow it up and just like vindictively destroy. Like, I think that's a fear that people have, is that there's like a little bit of like retaliation or something. But once again,
well, I mean, that would be the single biggest way Sweeney could ruin his future.
Exactly. That's what which is what I had just said, which was he is more long-sighted than that. If it doesn't work out here, I think it'll be because he tried his absolute best and the product just didn't pan out to be in a playoff team again. And it's just, I don't really have a huge fear about it. So I guess to Brooke's question, not understanding why we didn't see it as big an issue, I hope that clears it up. It may even have to do with difference of personality between what I think Sweeney is like, where his mind is versus a guy like Jim Montgomery, who wanted more money and wasn't happy with what he thought he was going to get in Boston and probably was ready to be done there because he wanted that contract to be bigger than what they're willing to offer. So he maybe the difference between him and Sweeney, I think is pretty big.
All right, let's get to Liz. Liz asks, one of the quotes that infuriated me during a press conference was when Sweeney said that, quote, "We're not going to plug a player in because he's young and exciting. They have to earn their stripes." Liz says to pair that with Cam's statement a month or two ago, stating that young players have to outscore their mistakes. And I just want to trade Patra, Mercurioff, Minton, and Lysell to a team with a different attitude. Sweeney picked up Oliver Wahlstrom off waivers, and he never, quote, earned his stripes, yet was given numerous games and chances despite poor play and dismal numbers. Why do Sweeney and Nealon continue to have one set of rules for some players and another set for the young guns? So, I mean, it's a fair question. I mean, I certainly think that the Sweeney quote about not just wanting young and exciting players in the lineup, they have to earn their stripes, and then Neely about not out, you know, wanting, you have to outscoring your mistakes. Like, I can see why fans get annoyed at those comments. I think there's some merit to what those guys are saying, but when it comes to Wahlstrom in particular, I think, to be fair to him, he had a little bit more of a track record in the NHL prior to getting to Boston at a similar age as Mercurioff. I think he had 70, maybe 75 points to his name in the NHL, a couple hundred games at the same age as Mercurioff. So that was with a team not named the Boston Bruins. So it was the Islanders who gave him that chance to do that. Maybe the counter argument could be, well, maybe the Bruins should give similar opportunity to Lysell, Mercurioff, that the Islanders gave to Wahlstrom. I just think ultimately I've always said that some of the younger guys should have been playing a lot longer as well. So I share some of the frustration, especially in a season where they clearly were not a good team. Years past, you got a stacked roster, three lines that can score, a fourth line that can grind. Yeah, I get it. The young kids aren't going to break through necessarily. This past season, I saw ample opportunity, to be honest with you guys, since probably November, December, because some of those guys had a chance in training camp to win a job and they didn't. So I'm not going to have revisionist history here and say Lysell should have been playing since October, because he should have earned that spot in camp if he wanted to be playing in October. But certainly from, call it December on, there was a real opportunity for those guys to play a little bit more than they probably did.
Yeah, and contract status also matters. Like, Lysell, Patra, Mercurioff, they could all be in Providence and be moved back and forth without worrying about waivers. Oliver Wahlstrom, they couldn't just send down. He had to be put on waivers. So I do think they ultimately gave him too long of an opportunity. Like, I think I felt like after 10, 11 games, it was pretty clear it wasn't working. And they ended up giving him, what, 16 or 17? So it lingered, what, 2 weeks longer than it should have, maybe, in my eyes. But, you know, there was a chance that once they waived him, someone else picked him up, and then whatever look you wanted to take at Oliver Wahlstrom is over. And it's just in, out, 10 games, see ya. Now, it turned out he cleared waivers, and he did end up in Providence anyways. But they – obviously, they saw something in Oliver Wahlstrom. They saw a guy who has scored not just at other levels, but in the NHL, to Brian's point, someone who had actually produced at least to an extent before suffering a pretty bad knee injury. And I think they wanted to take a real shot at seeing if that player could still be in there. And so did it hang a little too long? Yeah, maybe. And like we talked about it at the time, but ultimately I can't get too worked up over that, because it's like, we know this team is looking for help on the wing. So they saw a still relatively young winger on another team get waived and wanted to take a chance on it. And we're going to get mad about that. Like, I don't know. This team's going to have to take some flyers. Like, they did this past season. They're going to this off season. They're going to next season, because right now they don't have enough offense. So, yeah, and to just to the other point to push back on Liz, like the idea of trade these guys to another organization that has a different attitude. Most NHL organizations have this attitude. Now, maybe to varying levels, but like very few organizations are just throwing kids out there and giving them a ton of opportunities to play through mistakes. Like most winning organizations are pretty strict with their kids and demand, to use Cam Neely's quote, that they outscore their mistakes. Like, that's not unique to the Bruins. Maybe at times they're stricter than some. I think that's a fair criticism. But there aren't too many teams that are going to have just like a complete 180 of an attitude when it comes to young players and throwing them out there.
Yeah, and Fraser Mitton came from Toronto, where it was similar. You know, he was in a similar situation there with a team that tends to make the playoffs and probably treats their development system pretty similarly to Boston. Oliver Wahlstrom, the Oliver Wahlstrom experience in Boston may not be over. He's still with the organization. Like, is there a chance that they are trying to reclaim him and try to get him back into an NHL career? Who knows? He has had success in Providence. Now, if he ends up getting called up next season before somebody like Lysell and Patra, the same kind of outrage will probably pop back up. And to agree with what Brian said earlier, I did think Lysell and Patra both probably could have gotten more time during the season than they did. And some of this is conscious decision-making in terms of thinking development's happening more so in Providence than it does in Boston for them. You know, so it might not all be, though I will say the comments from management in the press conference weren't super encouraging about, you know, playing time for them next season. What they had given as a reason this season to send those guys to have more playing time in Providence was they thought that was the best way for them to develop. So maybe that's what it was this year. Next year, they're going to have to earn it again. And I understand the frustration, because people like Matt Patra. So he's a likable guy. He's somebody that came onto the scene and people wanted to see more of. I see Matt Patra jerseys a lot at TD Garden. And I think people got excited about Lysell and Fraser Mitton in the last few weeks of the season when they got to see them finally. So certainly excited to see what they do in camp and if they can win a job out of camp. But we don't know what this roster construction is going to look like next year, because we don't know who they're adding in free agency. So that'll all play into it as well.
One last comment from me here. And Liz did not do this, to her credit, but I've seen other people say, like, as kind of a counter to what I'm saying, like, well, the Capitals threw Ryan Leonard right in and he's playing the playoffs, and the Canadiens threw Ivan Demidov right into their lineup and he's making an impact in the playoffs. Ivan Demidov and Ryan Leonard are better players than Matt Patra, Fabian Lysell, Fraser Minton, Georgi Mirkalov. Like, I'm sorry, they are very different levels in terms of young prospects. Now, you might land one of the a prospect on that level with your top 10 pick this year, top 7 pick. But none of those guys that are in Providence right now are that level of prospect or player. So,
yeah.
Just get that out there.
They're not even similar types of players. Like Ryan Leonard, who probably should have won the Holby this year, is kind of like, in my mind, he's kind of like a Kachuk. Like, his mindset is very different than a Fabian Lysell. So, yeah, those are just my thoughts.
All right, we have time for a couple of quick ones before we sign off. So let's go to Ram from Grumpy's, which you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the bar in Montreal that you guys visited?
Yeah. Our favorite bar. Everyone yeah. go to Grumpy's if you go to Montreal.
Secretly, like a Bruins bar. If you're going to a Canadiens game, if you're going to a Bruins Habs game, sneak on over to Grumpy's. Nobody there will tell you, you know, be a Bruins fan there. It's a safe harbor in Montreal. There's actually quite a few Bruins fans in Montreal, and Ram's one of them, and Ram's girlfriend as well.
All right, so Ram brought up something that he wished was talked about in the press conference with ownership and management, and that was Zdeno Chara. He said, knowing full well that Cam and Don are safe in their jobs, I was wondering if there were any whisperings of where Chara might fit in.
Yeah, I mean, there really hasn't been. This remains a mystery, and Ram is also right to highlight that, you know, I wish it was brought up. We talked about this a little on Wednesday when we reacted, but like that press conference went for almost an hour and there was still like a whole list of questions we just didn't get to. Like I had that on my list. We had the captaincy, ultimately draft. Just ran out of time. Yeah. Draft stuff. There was really nothing about it. But yeah, Chara's been around. Like he was in the room the last game of the season, but we still don't know exactly what right now. He's just an advisor. So right now it's just kind of being around. And I think more than anything, like kind of just being a sounding board, more so for the coaches than I think at the executive level. But what he's going to be going forward, we don't know yet. And some of that's probably, what does Zdeno Chara want to do going forward? And I don't think we know that answer. You know, does he gravitate more towards the coaching side of it where he wants to work with players? Or does he gravitate more towards the management side where he wants to be part of roster building or player development or scouting? Like, I don't at this time have a feel for what exactly Zdeno Chara wants to do with this. And or even whether he wants it to be full time where he's like jumping all in. Maybe he just likes being an advisor where you're kind of in and out and it's not full time and it's a more flexible schedule and he doesn't have to go out on the road for anything. Like he might just want that for now too. So I know that's not that offered no clarity whatsoever, but that's honestly just like where we are. We don't have any more information than fans do, honestly.
Yeah. Like we know what that we've seen him a bit. Like we see him in the locker room, we've seen him around. So he's there. and he from what I understood, it was, you said a sounding board for coaches. I also believe a sounding board for players. Going through, you know, somewhat of an emotional experience at the trade deadline with guys going out and so much upheaval. And like, as Pastrnak has said, and I think, you know, guys that have been with the Bruins this for their whole career so far, this has been the most difficult season for them to deal with. The toughest, not making the playoffs and having guys leave the team that they've been friends with for a long time. So certainly seems like he's there to kind of impart some wisdom on maybe the younger leaders now that remain, which is obviously adds value. So even if he doesn't have an expanded role next season or even like a better defined role, there's still certainly value. I think most people would agree of him being around the organization and with the kind of captain that he was, just to have that voice there and around there, without Bergeron around anymore. So Yeah, but they both live around here, but Bergeron still hasn't gotten his feet really back in.
And they're both going to be resources for Charlie McAvoy and David Pastrnak in particular as they take over this team. Like, those are two guys that they're going to talk to. So whether, you know, in Char's case, there may be some sort of official capacity or role with the team, Bergeron, there's not at the moment, but like, those guys are going to be resources for those two as they try to figure out how to lead and how to build this.
And Bridget, you sent Scott and I a video of Charlie Jacobs on Nesson talking with Adam Pellerin after the press conference. And he did mention something about leadership and that it may or may not be in the room currently as far as who's wearing the C, and they have some things to iron out. And so I definitely think that Char is probably going to be there in more of a leadership role.
Breaking news, guys. Penguins and head coach Mike Sullivan are mutually parting ways.
Wow.
Well, there's a big one. There's a name to throw into the Bruins search for sure.
They almost got us with that one as we wound down again, but we got that one in.
Is that the first time getting breaking news on the podcast as opposed to after recording?
Yeah, it wasn't. It's not about the Bruins, but it's related because that's a guy that the Bruins, if they're not pursuing at least as an option, I'd be shocked. But this is a guy that is probably high on their list of who they want to add or at least have a conversation with about the next head coach.
Yeah, definitely going to be a candidate. And
yeah, I mean, that was like, I feel like that was the first name I threw out, you know, months ago. And really the whole Four Nations experience kind of drove it home even more for me because you talk to Mike Sullivan and you see him around an actual good team and you're reminded of just like, A, how smart he seems, and B, kind of just what a commanding presence he is. And you're like, yeah, like this is a guy that gets it and commands respect any room that he walks into. And like, that's the kind of guy where it's like, you know, again, you have this new era of the Bruins and you got to like build back culture and, you know, and you want to make sure there's like a professional approach. And yeah, sometimes that has to originate with players, but like Mike Sullivan's a coach that can contribute to that and bring that and be like a legit leader for your team and your organization and not just, you know, a good X's and O's coach. So I absolutely put him on the list, and I'd be shocked if the Bruins don't at least talk to him, whether it graduates to, you know, official interview or not. That will depend on what Mike Sullivan wants to do, but
I hope they call them right now. I hope they're on the phone with them right now. This guy won 3 Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh, and he has connections to the city that we've gotten into, including Charlie McAvoy, and he would be a great option. Like if they brought him in, I'd be genuinely excited to see what the turnaround would be with him. That's such a huge factor too. We've been talking about roster construction, but how big of a difference the right head coach would make. This decision is just as important to turning things around next year as some of the free agency stuff and draft stuff. It's a big decision. And I feel like also we got a little bit of a hint. Sorry, Brian, I'll shut up in a second. that Sweeney and Neely want, they were more leaning towards someone with pretty extensive NHL experience and try to find, you know, a guy.
Yeah, or at least some NHL experience is what Sweeney said. Like,
yes,
it was clear they're not going to bring in someone who has not coached in any capacity. You have to at least be an assistant somewhere.
Yeah, and that David Carl, you know, Ben Barr, those guys were seemingly eliminated from our conversations in that moment. But also, I got the sense that they were kind of saying the more NHL experience, the better, and obviously, Mike Sullivan falls into that category.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would definitely think that would be a good hire. I mean, part of me right now looks at Boston's roster and Pittsburgh's roster, and, you know, they're pretty comparable. So, you know, they would have to make some improvements. I mean, I'm not saying Mike Sullivan couldn't take Boston's roster and do better with it than Pittsburgh's. I'm just saying, you know, when Scott mentions that you see what he does with a good roster at Four Nations, the Bruins are far from that roster at the moment. Obviously, no NHL roster is a Four Nations roster. You got my point, though. Like, he's been coaching a struggling team in Pittsburgh and hasn't found success in the most recent seasons. But as you mentioned, Bridget, three-time Stanley Cup winner. We saw what he did in Boston 20 years ago as a rookie coach, and certainly one of the most respected coaches in the game. So I think that I would imagine Boston's pursuit for him will be pretty hard.
And a coach like that does not come free often.
No.
So, like,
no. I think he's two cups, right?
Oh, was it two cups? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The first one was with Dan Bylsma.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, the coach like that doesn't come up often. So you have to imagine he's going to get a lot of phone calls, and wherever he lands, you know, maybe he's there for a long time. It could be one of those things where, like, John Cooper doesn't come available, and like coaches of that caliber don't come available a whole lot.
Yeah. He's a tier A coach. He's in that upper tier of coaches. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
Him, Cooper, Bruce Cassidy, who is up there.
I mean, Paul Maurice, for sure.
Yep. So, yeah, definitely up there.
Well, I think that is going to be all we can get to today. As we've said in recent episodes, it's a long off season. So if you're sending, honestly, send mailbag questions anytime you want. We will get to them as they come in. It might not be the immediate episode after you send them in, but they're all going to get replied to, because there's a lot of hockey to discuss, and we have many months before the Bruins hit the ice again. So please keep sending them. For those of you that didn't hear your questions answered in this episode, I promise that the next episode, they probably will be, whether that's probably Wednesday or Thursday. So again, thank you for your submissions. Bridget Scott, any final thoughts?
Draft lottery next week. Not confirmed yet, but excited to see, you know, where the ping pong balls land. Maybe, you know, early next week, it seems like, is a fair guess on when we'll be, you know, talking about ping pong balls.
Yeah, and I will just tease along those same lines. I'm planning Tuesday morning on WEEI.com to drop my Bruins big board, which will basically be top 10 players ranked in order of how I think the Bruins should rank them and or draft them, depending on where they're picking.
Yeah, plenty of coverage on the draft coming up.
All right. Thank you all very much for listening. Enjoy the rest of your work week, and we'll talk to you soon.